I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back in here on this Football Friday. That happens to be a really cool park, by the way, Camden Yards in Baltimore. I don't know if you've
been. Best one I've ever been to.
Really?
Yeah. They say Pittsburgh's really good, too, but Camden Yards is fantastic.
I don't think anything's going to top Wrigley for me.
Okay.
But have you been to Wrigley?
No, never. I'll never go. I'm a White Sox. I'm a White Sox Cardinals fan until I die. Like, never.
I haven't been to Fenway.
Fenway, no, I would like to
I would love to go.
Dan, the White Sox park sucked.
It's terrible.
It's terrible.
But you take the ride up on the L. You got the performers on the L. You go to the South Side. It's a good ride.
No, I didn't like anything about the White Sox experience.
It's been a while.
It's a very corporate ballpark too. Like it's
not. Oh, really?
It just has nothing to it. I mean, it's you got to go to a Cubs game, man. Go to a Cubs game if you're in Chicago. Just you don't have to root for them. But go to a Cubs game, man. Wrigley is like the coolest, that whole Wrigleyville area.
I actually know some Cubs.
Dan, you're a dive bar guy. You would love some of the bars up there, man. We went to this place, the Cubby
Boston.
Bear.
Fenway Park area, probably the best thing Boston has going for it.
Wow.
Yeah, I am going to do Fenway soon at some point. But
they got this
bar over there, Dan, the Cubby Bear. And
I like the name already.
I hope I'm doing the right one here. The Chicago people probably jump me if I'm not. But they have upstairs at this bar, and by the way, the beers at this bar are like, I don't know, $1.
Three, yeah.
And they all drink that like old style.
Yeah,
they all drink
style.
That beer. And
that's a type of bar.
Oh yeah,
it's a type of beer.
It's just a water beer. Yeah, it's
yeah.
a really cheap Chicago yeah. beer that you just get to be festive. You know, if you're a tourist, I guess. Anyway, they have upstairs. They have these crummy batting cages.
Ooh.
And my son had like the time of his life up there. I went and hit in the thing, and now the bats are like 50 years old, so they have no pop. You get out of there and your hands are ringing. But
sounds awesome, by the way.
It really is, man. It's
bring your own bat then.
Yeah, bring my own bat. Come in like I'm going to work.
Yeah, walk in with a bat in a bar. Like that'll go well.
I'm here to put in some work. I'm gonna work on my swing. We had such a great time at Wrigley, but Baltimore was also a really cool experience as well. But yeah, Fenway is next on my list, right there with you. I haven't been to the new Yankee Stadium either. I haven't been to any Yankee Stadium.
You're good. I'm just saying you're good. I don't know.
At some point I will make it up there. Somebody said, by the way, Dan, you mentioned the water park, and I don't know how you knew this. There was a water park called Atlantis. Now I am a little too young to.
That's true.
But that was down in Kendall, and it got knocked down by the hurricane, apparently. And then someone said there was a Six Flags until Hurricane Andrew destroyed it. Now I was seven when we went through Andrew, so I don't really know.
There was a water park on 95 right next to.
That's Atlantis.
Yeah, it was Atlantis, and that go kart track. Oh my God, that was so amazing.
Yeah, Boomers.
No, we didn't call it Boomers. It was something Grand Prix, I think.
Grand Prix was it? No, Grand Prix was in Miami near like Mall of Americas.
There was something else. It was by 95
it ended up being Boomers. Was it a Grand Prix before?
It was something. We went there after like prom. Like all of us, like that was tradition back in the day. You go there after prom and race go karts in your tux. Like that was tradition in Miami.
You went to Carroll City, right?
Yes, that is correct. I'm a Chief.
Okay, I'm just making sure because I don't know all the high schools here, but I do know that you're a Carroll City guy.
Yes, I am a Carroll City Chief. Proud Carroll City Chief.
Danny, where'd you go to high school?
Dan, I went to two different high schools down here. I went to Killian, and I went. We moved to Boca, as you well know, and I went to Olympic Heights in Boca. So I went to. Multiple
great school,
high
Olympic
down here.
But both of them are great schools.
Because that stuff's important to me. Because where I'm from, it's your neighborhood basically. Because they build schools for neighborhoods to keep everybody separate for whatever reason. But like where you say you're from high school kind of tells you who you are. So that stuff interests me.
Same thing here. Same thing.
Where I grew up is weird though too. Because like I went to Palmetto Middle,
All right.
And Palmetto Middle was like a hike from where we lived. And I wasn't in the district for Palmetto High School.
Well, you were a great athlete, so that's probably why you were.
Yes, they recruited me in middle school too. I actually was on the middle school volleyball team. Yes, they recruited me for that. That was fun, by the way. We used to skip school for all these sports, which was great. My second high school had a bowling team.
Wow.
Now that was, you talk about taking advantage of the system. That was awesome.
Wait, you weren't on the bowling team, though. You didn't.
Oh, no, I was.
Oh.
I was.
What was your highest score?
Regularly break 100?
I'm worried about scores.
I would flirt in high school. I would flirt with the 200s.
Wow.
I could play.
Whoa.
What?
You actually earned your role on the team.
And then, I mean, like, I got into it pretty seriously. And
did
like,
you have your
like
own
college
ball?
Years. Yeah, of course you have your own
ball. When's the last time you bowled, bro?
I haven't played in a while. No, it's
virtually
it's been a little bit.
It's actually a bowling place near where you live.
They call it an alley. Bowling alley.
Yeah.
Dania Point, where they used to have Atlantis and all the places.
There's actually a few bowling alleys by
me.
No,
there's a few bowling alleys
there's
by
There's one
you.
In Pembroke
yeah.
Pines. There's an AMF one over there. And then there's
go
Sparrows.
You know, I hate to be like this. My guilty pleasure, I don't even know if I'm guilty about it. One of my favorite spectator sports is women's college bowling.
Interesting.
It is unbelievable. Wichita State is my team.
Bird Bowl, someone said.
Bird Bowl's huge.
Speaking of places that closed down, I was at Don Carter's. That was like, I had birthday parties at Don Carter's.
Of course.
That whole area, everything's gone. They had Don Carter's, then you had Riverboat Playhouse, which closed down, and then they opened Discovery Zone.
Ooh.
Discovery Zone's gone. They have something over there now. We went to a birthday party there a few weeks ago. There's something that I don't even remember what it's called.
What's the move of the birthday parties? Do you actually eat the cake? Because I love birthday cake. Do
Who
you actually
eat birthday cake?
Do you eat the pizza?
I mean, the food is usually horrific at but, these I mean, places. Like the pizza is genuinely bad.
It's
like usually
cardboard with marinara.
Yeah, usually you don't want to pass up like free food, especially at a party or something. But the food at these places, is just so unbelievably bad. Like, it's almost like they're intentionally trying to make it bad. Like, I don't even know where you would buy food this cheap.
They make it super bland for kids.
Yeah.
I will tell you, the one place that is in Pembroke Lakes Mall, I can't remember. Round one is, their food is pretty good. I got to acknowledge that. Round one, they got some good pizza.
I drove by that place the other day, Omar. Might have to
you
check
should take
that
your
out.
Kids.
I know.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I'm you surrounded could go, by you, stuff now, man. We're going to go to that C.B. Smith Park, the one we went to. That's where we went to the water park. You and I went together.
For you, round one, you take your kids. We take our daughters there all the time. Take your kids and you put them upstairs for 90 minutes. It's like $27, 90 minutes, and you won't ever see your kids, and you can sit in the massage chair. I shouldn't put that out there because, I can't, you know, I don't want it too crowded.
A good secret. So it's just Don Carter's now Walgreens, Chipotle, and Starbucks. That's sad. All right. We do have to pause here. There were two Grand Prix Race-A-Rama parks, Omar. You were right. Grand Prix Race-A-Rama, one on 95. We called the Castle. I remember that, the Castle. And then the Big Castle Mini Golf. There you go, man.
Most of my dates ended up at Grand Prix. That was my spot. It was like a two mile go kart track. Now the go karts were kind of deadly, but it was a 2 mile go kart track.
So we've gone to this. There's a new go kart thing. This K1 Speed. Have you seen?
Oh,
that?
That's not new. That's not new.
Well, it was new for me because I went for the first time, and
it's expensive.
Territory
for me.
That's like the F1 of go karts.
Yeah,
of go kart racing places. Like that's like the probably as close as you can get to throwing your kid into like a race car.
Oh yeah, kids can't really drive it.
They do. They have kids cars. Well, at least my 8-year-old was able to. All right, Omar, we got to get to Mike Florio. That's more important than our race car stories here and our golf, our mini golf and all these other things here. So we're gonna get to Mike Florio when we come back. A lot of stuff to get to. Florio joins us next.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's head back out to the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. Shop over 2,000 Toyotas on sale at one location. Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan. ToyotaofHollywood.com, where we are joined by Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio here on this Football Friday. Mike, thank you for the time. As always, appreciate it.
Gentlemen, how are you today?
We are good, Mike. And boy, the Miami Dolphins, not so much. So they have turned into the national media punching bag over the last few weeks.
All because of Asante Samuels.
Mike, it's gotten ugly down here, man.
Well, you know, I think I said to Joe at some point over the past couple of weeks, maybe more than once, when you look at all the things they've been dealing with this late in the offseason, who has to contend with issues like that? What other team is trading key players in late June? These are all things, as I've said repeatedly, that should have been resolved early in the offseason. You get real replacements for Jonnu Smith, not a trade for a guy who hasn't played in a year. You draft a tight end, you sign a tight end, you trade for a tight end early in free agency. You get Jalen Ramsey traded so you can plot your path forward. You get guys in the building for the offseason program. You don't have guys not in the building for the offseason program and have that dark cloud over the team. It's just not a normal way of doing business, as evidenced by the fact that no other team had this kind of stuff hanging over them in late June.
Cincinnati.
It was just the Dolphins.
Cincinnati does. I mean, you know, this is the time for business, and players are usually trying to shake down teams for new contracts. So I think this
Cincinnati's
is pretty
trying to keep their guys, Omar. Miami knew these guys weren't going to be there. If you know those guys are going to be there, get them the hell out of the building in March, not in late June.
Yeah, but I don't think that Minka Fitzpatrick was available in March. I think they were patient, and they got somebody who by far I did not expect to be the return for Jalen Ramsey. I really think Jonnu Smith is a fifth round pick, so I think it's a Jalen Ramsey for Minka Fitzpatrick. You trade my problem for your problem, and we're all good. So it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. But Asante's claims, and I will say this. There isn't anything that he said in his statement that is not true, has some validity, has some credence to it. But explain to me, how does it take off nationally, Mike?
Well, because it's a guy who plays at a high level in the NFL. His son was a high round draft pick. Wasn't he a first rounder? He's looking for a job.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And
Miami's interested. Yeah.
And off it goes. And when something like that lands in July, hey, it's a lot more likely it's going to get noticed because there's not a whole lot else going on. And, you know, the reality is there's always something going on in the NFL. It's just between the middle of June to the latter part of July, we notice things that we otherwise wouldn't notice when there's actual football going on. There's always something. And that was a perfect time for Samuel to say what he said. And you know, there is just a weird vibe nationally as it relates to the Dolphins. Where are they? The window was opening a couple of years ago. It feels like the window has closed and they don't realize it, and they're going to fly right into it this year. That's the vibe that I've just kind of attached to them based upon monitoring the Dolphins along with the other 31 teams, that they're not a true contender. They still seem to believe they are, and they may find out in a very harsh and stark way this season how far they have to go to compete with the best teams in the AFC. I mean, how we spend so much time talking about the Steelers with Aaron Rodgers, at the end of the day, are they going to be able to compete with the best teams in the AFC? I don't think so.
Depends on where Aaron Rodgers is. If you're talking about the Aaron Rodgers who played the Miami Dolphins, I'd say yes. If you're talking about the Aaron Rodgers who played everybody else, I'd say no.
Even that Aaron Rodgers, when you look at the Chiefs and the Ravens and the Bills and the Bengals, and the Texans are right there on the cusp. They've made it to the Final Four in the conference two straight years. There are some powerhouse teams in the AFC. And I know that when everyone's 0-0, and the NFL loves this, we can talk ourselves into, well, you know, you win this game, you win that game, you get, hey, this happens and that, we get lucky. Hey, we may be able to do something. They love that. They want every fan of every team to think that. And we learn year after year, even though we get burned, we learn when you reset to 0-0 how to come up with ways to make ourselves think this could be the year.
Yep.
Because it does happen. Lightning does strike. And I'm not saying it's impossible, but, you know, there's a handful of contenders in each conference. And in the AFC, I don't think anybody would objectively say the Dolphins are a contender. They're going to have to play their way into that role.
Absolutely. Mike, I wanted to get into this NFLPA controversy, which I see you're stirring it up. And I love that you do, because you're probably one of the few watchdogs for the NFL and the NFLPA, as am I. I wasn't a big, huge fan of D'Amore Smith, and neither was he a fan of me. But this Lloyd Howell situation, and for those who don't understand, please explain what's going on, and does this possibly connect to the cover up of collusion? Because how does the NFLPA catch the NFL red handed in collusion and basically try to cover it up? Explain that to me.
Well, and I need to work backward, because I think what came out yesterday was the most significant revelation as it relates to Lloyd Howell, who was hired 2 years ago, guys, under a cloud of extreme secrecy, no transparency. We didn't even know who the other candidates were. It's just, boom, all of a sudden, here's a new executive director. Oh, and he has no union experience whatsoever. Oh, and he comes from a corporate background. And I remember joking, is this guy a Manchurian candidate? And now we find out that the guy who is responsible for representing zealously and aggressively against a band of oligarchs on a daily basis the interests of the men who put their lives on the line literally every Sunday, Monday, Thursday, and whenever else they play a game, the guy who should be solely focused on helping them get the best possible terms and conditions of employment, this guy's got a side hustle with a private equity fund that has been approved to purchase minority stakes in NFL teams. Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? And now, and I just posted something that, you know, I'll probably get a nasty email from people with the New York Times / Athletic. But, you know, the unnamed union sources are defending this. How can, you know, how have we gotten to this point where things that used to be, and it almost sounds quaint to say we used to care about conflicts of interest, but we did. Now we don't. And yep. I don't get it. Because if I'm an NFL player, if I'm in any position of influence with the union, I'm like, whoa, mm-hmm. wait a minute. First of all, why do you need a second job? Why? Should we have a bake sale for you too? Is $3.6 million a year not enough that you're making from the NFLPA? And you're working for a company that's got ties to the NFL? Here's how that works, because I deal with this from time to time. You know, there are lines that if you cross them as it relates to the NFL, they're going to make their displeasure known. And now that he's got this double life where he's working for this group with ties to the NFL, if he goes too far in his representation of the players and pisses off the NFL, they back channel to the Carlyle Group, this private equity fund, and now he's got a problem. So he's on a tightrope. He shouldn't be on the tightrope. He should be all
even have this job
representing the players.
He shouldn't have this job. And here's my thing with the NFLPA. When did we get to the point lawyers should be advising a player who leads this union group? Not a lawyer is the leader of this union group. It doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, when Gene Upshaw
passed in 2008 after a short fight with pancreatic cancer, and he had been in charge of that union forever. He had the same kind of job security that Roger Goodell enjoys as commissioner of the league. He did a good job, and he was able to maintain his hands on the wheel for a very long time. And, you know, it was working. And it's hard to find somebody who's got all the requisite skills, because here's what you're ultimately doing. You are facing down 32 of the richest and most powerful people in the world, and they are ruthless. And here's the other problem, guys. When you're the head of the NFLPA, you have one hand tied behind your back, because if it ever comes down to the nuclear option of a work stoppage, you got one side that will shrug at the prospect of a year without football. They don't need the money. They're going to own the team their whole life. Well, we can do without a year if it gets us what we want. For the players, they don't want to miss a game. They don't want to miss a check. Look at all the turmoil financially that was caused for guys because there was a lockout in the offseason. They didn't even miss any game checks, but because there weren't signings and signing bonuses and cash flow that way, you had guys who did all sorts of bad loans and had financial issues. Like, it's when you're dealing with that kind of imbalance, where management will lock out the players for a year and the players won't miss a single game check, good luck getting the best possible deal you can for the players. And I talked to an agent yesterday who said history is going to remember Demoris Smith well, because we're starting to understand what the head of that union has to deal with. And it's a bunch of apathy. And the problem is, the league had been weaponizing the players' apathy against them for years. Now it looks like union leadership is weaponizing the apathy of the players against them.
Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk here with us. Mike, I'll leave you on this one. We were talking earlier, and we brought your name up because I know you have thoughts on the NFL draft and, you know, guys perhaps being able to, you know, choose or dictate where they end up. And I'm just curious if you had a chance to see what happened with the NBA draft and Ace Bailey. He had a couple of teams that he was like, I won't go there. I won't play for you guys. And then Danny Ainge said, you know, you're going to come play here. Like, I don't care what you think. I'm just curious if you saw that, if you had any thoughts on that, because I know you.
I wrote about it. The title of the article was "The NFL Needs an Ace Bailey." I've been saying for years, not all of us, because it didn't take with me, and I think others share my view, but not many. This idea that being drafted by an NFL team is some sort of an honor and a privilege. The honor and the privilege is the team having the ability to tell a top talent, "You are coming to work for us, even if you don't want to." That's the honor and the privilege. It's been twisted around, and they've got, you know, it's like this weird Harry Potter sorting hat ritual, and all the fans are like, "You must submit to the sorting hat." Well, okay, tell that to anyone who's been drafted in the upper rounds to go play quarterback for the Jets. Ask them how that's gone for them over the past decade. So I love it when a player exercises anything that reflects pushing back against the system. I love it. And right now we've got this Shamar Stewart thing in Cincinnati that's still percolating. And the end result, I don't think it's going to happen. And I feel bad for him if it does, but he could sit out the whole year and re-enter the draft. And as we get more and more guys who come to the NFL with money in the bank that they never had before, thanks to the NIL explosion, I'm hoping we get to one of these points where there's a high-end quarterback, and it may be Arch Manning who does it. I don't know, because his uncle Eli did it 21 years ago. It may be one of these guys may say, "Hey, if you draft me, I'll sit out all year and I'll live off my NIL money, and I'll see you next year."
Well, that would be crazy. Mike, thank you for the time. As always, appreciate it. Joe will be back next week. We appreciate you coming on with us here.
Thanks, guys. Great talking to you.
All right. Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio here with us on this football.
I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the new podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. Each episode, I'll be joined by a rotating group of women's basketball experts to talk WNBA, college hoops, the new Unrivaled League, and the shifting landscape of the sport. The game is growing, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show and Odyssey Podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.